Hello, listeners. Welcome to a really important episode. It is important because I want you to know that the podcast is getting more in depth. It's going to be more filled with information and ideas and stories and strategies to really, really create the life you keep saying you want to create, but maybe you're getting stuck in some spots. Today's episode is about creating joy, finding joy, and my guest, Melissa Bloom, is joy personified. Her energy, her spirit, her mission and vision for life is just so inspiring. She is the founder of Joy School, and this is full of lessons and supportive messages from Melissa, as well as membership includes a live group call every 6 weeks, and she also has a book, The Path to Joy, which is, quote, all about changing the lens in which we view the world. The Path to Joy podcast is more tips, tricks, and encouragement on how to move the needle on your joy in your life, find more joy, practicing joy. And I resonate so much with Melissa because everything she shares in today's episode and in the work that she does is exactly where I see my mission and purpose in life, and that is to really help people change their perspective on things, viewing life differently, changing the narratives, and really growing in who we are and who we're meant to be. So today, that might start for you in finding more joy. So come on in and listen to this wonderful conversation with Melissa. I'm so glad you're here. And if you get something from today's conversation, please share it with someone else so that they can go and find Melissa and who she is and what she offers, and so that they can also come back to this podcast, to both of our podcasts, for more encouragement and direction and help and hope in their lives. Come on in and enjoy the conversation. I'm so glad you're here. Hello, Melissa. Thank you for being here today. The Joy Facilitator. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad to have met you in a spot that probably not typical to people to meet you in another membership.
Not typical for either one of us, really.
No. But I'm so glad it happened. I feel it to be very serendipitous. So
yeah.
We've been able to enjoy a conversation outside of this podcast episode, but I am so glad we're doing this podcast episode because I want listeners to hear about joy, what that means, how you facilitate it, and just more about you.
Well, that sounds great. I guess I'll start by saying that joy has a lot to do with perception. And joy is a practice. And the great news is we can practice it. We can use little tools and tricks and just work our joy muscle. So it's not like we have to be born with rose-colored glasses. We can practice things so that we start to slowly change the tint of our glasses.
Oh, I like that. I like that. And I realize in today's world, finding joy can be hard if we are only exposing ourselves to the difficulties of the world. How do you find joy for yourself? We'll start right off there.
I find joy through connection. I have a lot of practices that I do by myself that keep my energy high and just keep me present. But in general, I find curiosity about other people and connection to be the number one source for me. And here's why. I think one of the things that we fear is what's going on in our country, what's going on in our world. You know, it's these what if questions that we have no control over. And some of them are a microcosm, what's going to happen in our families, our children, and then bigger, right? Our country, our community, our world. And what I think we forget is that most people are really wonderful. And I believe in humanity more than I believe in despair.
I really like that, because that leaves room for hope, that leaves room for possibilities, that leaves room for joy.
Yeah.
Wow. So what got you started in this road of, I need everyone else to find their joy and I'm going to teach them how to do it as best I can? How did this start for you?
Well, you know, it's always a circuitous route. You don't wake up one day and say, you know what? I'm going to teach people about joy. Everything is circuitous. I think it started 20 plus years ago. I was newly married, living in my house in the suburbs. I had no friends because, you know, how do you make friends in the suburbs, right? What am I going to, like, go to a bar and say, hey, do you want to be my friend? So, and I didn't have kids at the time. It's before kids. So I joined an adult school belly dancing class. And I thought, you know what? Maybe I'll make some friends. I didn't. I did not make a single friend. However, when I went to that high school, it was a very interesting experience. I was about 24. The kids were, you know what, 15, 16, 17. And it was evening, but there were some kids milling about. And what I remember most from that whole experience was that I was very jealous. I was so jealous because these kids still had every opportunity in front of them. They could do anything, they could be anything. And here I was married and I was already thinking about having kids. And I thought, well, I need to have a job that's a little more flexible. And, you know, we just bought a home. So I have to be careful about financial decisions. And so it felt like I was more in the nuts and bolts of reality, whereas they were in this wondrous place of possibility. They could do anything, right? The world was truly their oyster. And well, now I think back, I think, oh my gosh, Melissa, that is so silly. You were less than 10 years older, but really it was about perception. And in my mind, my window of possibility, right, had closed. And there was less available to me. And it took me about 20 years to appreciate that it was only my perception that got me into that pickle, right? The window had never closed. I could still do or be anything. It was only perception. And it got me thinking about perception a lot. And I started listening to some spiritual teachers like Wayne Dyer and Esther Hicks and Louise Hay and all these great folks, thinking about the power of our thoughts and what's available to us. So yes, I talk a lot about joy and I speak a lot about joy and the practice of joy, but joy really is encompassing wonder, possibility, curiosity. It's way more than just feeling content. It's feeling like anything is possible.
And giving yourself permission, I imagine, is a big piece of that, because depending on what age and stage you're at developmentally, you could perceive more days ahead of you or less days ahead of you. And what is there for you to do? I know when I speak to anybody post, say, 45, that midlife, they start saying the midlife, it's like, we don't know our end. So how can you say it's mid? It could be the very beginning of so many years. So how do you, for you, give yourself permission to do that, change that perception and explore it, and also to decide how you do want to feel?
I think it begins with awareness, we can't do anything without being aware.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I love analogies, so I'll use a lot of them because that's how my mind works. And it's helpful to have like a visual anchor. So the analogy I use is, well, it's kind of like you have an old bathroom in your house and you know, you want to rip out the curtains that were on the tub. We actually owned a house that had curtains attached to the bathtub. And you know, you want to rip out the shag carpet. Yes, we also had shag carpet in a bathroom and the wallpaper and change the fixtures. And you want to do all those things, but you can't do anything until you put the light on, right? So the beginning is just let's put the light on and understand where are we unreliable narrators of our stories? Where do we sell ourselves short? Where do we, you know, kind of act as our own worst enemy a lot of times and say, no, that's not possible. I can't do that. Where are we doing that? And it's not to say you're going to, you know, midlife say, I'm going to go to medical school and start a functional medicine practice, which I did think about at one point. You could, but it's to say, well, but why not? If it really called to me, why not? I don't need to throw up all the obstacles. Let me just remove the obstacles from my mind and say, at this moment, anything is possible. I may not be able to be an Olympic high jumper, right? That could be out. There are a couple things that I'm just crossing off because I'm 5 feet and, you know, my jumping ability is fairly limited. But most things are still on the table. So where am I just crossing them off because I have a bunch of old voices in my head?
I really like that sentence, unreliable narrator. I'm all about people changing their narrative, how they have hearing the voices in their head or how they have spoken to themselves, and shifting that is so powerful. I believe that to be so powerful. So, okay, I start to do that. I start to change my perception because I'm turning on more lights and I'm getting more aware. Then what?
I think having daily practices in place, almost like mini homework assignments, it's very helpful because we fall back into our old habits. You know, we have these automatic thoughts. There's some crazy statistics out there. We think somewhere between 60 and 80,000 thoughts a day. And roughly 85 to 95%, so somewhere in that range, our thoughts are negative. And 70% are repeats of the day before. So we're in a negative repeat loop, right? We just keep thinking the same negative thoughts every day. So it's very helpful to have anchors, practices in your life to shake things up, to start to see your world in a new way. I don't think this happens overnight, but I like to give, when I work with clients one-on-one or I have a program, Joy School, I like to give a mini homework assignment. So one assignment, for example, would be stop, drop, and appreciate. Right? These are not like earth-shattering concepts, but it's something that we're going to practice multiple times a day, every single day for a period of time, because we're moving out of our automatic, negative, repetitive thoughts. So when you wake up in the morning, doesn't have to be a full gratitude list of everything in your life you're grateful for. What are you appreciative of just in that moment, right? It's still cold here in the Northeast. I'm very appreciative of my flannel sheets, my warm bed. I get up. I'm appreciative of my first cup of coffee. So appreciative, right? I'm appreciative that I actually usually have 10, 15 minutes to stretch. I don't have to hit the ground running most mornings. I realize how fortunate I am. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So it's a regular practice, and I'll do it multiple times a day. So it's adding in these practices so that we start to see, oh, I feel so lucky. Oh, practices to slow down, right? Here's another funny one. You're going to laugh, Heather. You know the 59th Street Bridge song?
Yes.
By Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah.
I just recorded this for a recent podcast episode that I did. And I play the song in my head all the time because it's my natural tendency to rush. I have three boys, three teenagers. My mom lives with us right now. I'm always running around rushing. So the first lines of the song, slow down, you move too fast. You gotta make the morning last. I sing it all the time.
Wow.
Right? These are little things. They're free, but they help you, remind you, hey, slow down. It's okay.
Yeah. And it has meaning to you. So it's more sustainable that you would continue to do it. And thank you for giving gratitude another word for in using appreciation. Because I think we also, the noise becomes white noise when we hear the make the gratitude journal, do the this, do the that, and they become tasks rather than practices.
Yeah.
And they become pass fail rather than routine. So I'm gonna use that appreciation instead of gratitude for myself. I love that.
Yay. That's great.
Yeah. And share it with others because it's brilliant. And I will give you credit.
You don't have
And when you can automate, when you can routine these things like the stop, drop, and appreciate, and they just, you'll notice if they're not happening, it seems, because they are just part of the fabric of your, of what you do.
Yes. And it's handy to have a bunch of tools on hand because some are going to help in some situations and sometimes you need a little more, right? It's also being honest with where you are. This is not an upward trajectory. Oh, I better not slip back to my old emotional state. I only have to go up and up and up. That concept doesn't exist. That's not how we are as humans. We're going to ebb and we're going to flow. And what we need when we ebb is different than when we're in flow. It's just how we are. So rather than think about how I was yesterday, this is how I'm feeling today, right? Right before we started recording, I mentioned I'm a little bit tired. We had a lot of fun events. We had daylight savings. So I'm a little more tired. And I think that plays into a little less motivation. That's where I am. What do I need right now?
Checking in with yourself. That is something I, from the mountaintops, tell clients all the time. Check in with yourself. Goodness, do you even know if you're hungry, thirsty, tired?
Yeah.
Any of that. And I also appreciate you giving permission to say, you're not always going to be in an exact sort of mood. Right. So an analogy I use is feelings and emotions and body sensations are like an open house and they come in and maybe some will stay and some will go. And you might pay more attention to some of those feelings or sensations or whatever more than others, but it's they all can hang out together and it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you first started this, really noticing joy for what it is and what it can be, what was something that you found to be interesting that you didn't really think you were surprised to find out about the term joy, the practice of joy?
I think joy is really about being present. And what I didn't appreciate is when I felt pure joy, I would not be thinking about the future or the past. I would be wholly present, absorbing everything in the moment. And the other part of joy is, I think we do a lot of, I should do this, or I should work on this, or I should look this way, or I should work out more. There's a lot of things that we're putting ourselves up to do. And when you feel joy and you're in the moment, there's none of that should, that litany of, well, I probably should be working out, or I probably should be eating less oatmeal. There's none of that.
Yeah.
It's just joy for the moment.
Right.
And I think it's liberating. It's liberating because all the weight of expectation and should is released. I don't, to experience this feeling of joy and enjoy the people I'm with, I don't have to be thinner. I don't have to be smarter. I don't have to write another book. I don't have to be more well-read. I don't have to have better color hair. I don't have to do any of those things.
Right. You're at such a different energy level, I imagine, also when that becomes your lens that you're viewing your experiences through.
And I think you get quieter. For me, at least, I notice when I'm really in a state of joy, I don't feel the need to talk as much or explain things, or I just sit back and enjoy the people I'm with and listen.
Right. I feel like that's really powerful. Just what you just said there, I get quieter. I don't have to fight the fight or let all of my thoughts and opinions be known or any of those kind of things. That is so freeing and powerful. And I think difficult for some people to understand because they want to have that discourse, that energized battle or fight or whatever in the moment. And you're just able to, yeah, I can see where you are and it's okay. I don't have to.
Yeah. And sometimes that energy is people pleasing, right? We like to entertain. And it's nice to not be an entertainer.
Right. Right. I have through the years grown to realize that being in the kitchen, preparing everything while everyone's in the living room, enjoying, is actually unkind to myself as well. Like they're missing out on me. I'm missing out on that. So we get creative and we make the food ahead of time, or we order, or we, you know, doesn't have to be food centered, but any of those things to just, what do I need in this experience that's going to be out here for me?
Yeah.
And right. Maybe I do just need to be present and y'all can bring something to eat if you want. And if you don't, that's okay. I have water and crackers.
Yeah.
What's the biggest thing you think you've learned about yourself from the start of this journey? And I want you to talk about Joy School and your writing and all those kind of things.
I think the biggest thing I've learned is, well, I do think I'm a good writer. And it's not easy to say that because we like to be humble and not say things that we're good at.
Yeah.
But I'm a good writer, and I'm a good writer because I don't use flowery language. I think my writing is very clear and simple. And I think it's very accessible. And I am proud of that. What I've learned about me is that I'm very compassionate and I'm very loving. And when I have the time, I become even more so, right? When I'm frenzied and rushed and trying to do everything, that becomes less. But the best version of me is very, very patient, loving, and compassionate. And that fills me up to hear someone else's story and just sit with it and listen and be there and share space with them is a gift to me. I think it's a gift both ways.
Yeah, right. Do you find that when you are compassionate towards yourself and loving towards yourself, that that fills the cup for you to then pour it out more to others as well?
Absolutely. And that's the hardest part for most of us, is to not beat ourselves up. We all have that Achilles heel, that one thing. Sometimes it's more than one, but we all have that area where we feel more insecure and we beat ourselves up. Yeah. And it's not easy to change the words that we speak to ourselves and believe it. Right. We could say mantras and we can write things on mirrors and say them. But if we don't believe them, I'm not sure what the point is. So to say things that you really believe, that takes practice.
Right.
It takes a lot of practice. I do it all the time. I'll tell you, one of my biggest insecurities has always been weight and size. And never feeling like I am the same as everyone else. And I'm really not that different than everyone else, right? But that's my own perception. And in my normal daily life, I don't notice it as much because I'm going through routines and, but I noticed I would get more insecure and feel more shame around how I look when we would travel, be outside of our routine.
Yep.
And I started practicing ways to be gentle and kind and loving so that I would believe it, right? I say things to myself that I believe, and I practice it all the time because I don't want to go on this beautiful vacation and inside my head, be tearing myself apart and not enjoying all the people around me, right? I usually travel with my family. You mentioned middle age. Well, I could be, right? I'm 44, could be somewhere around middle age, although I keep saying I'll be 110. And what I feel so much, especially because, you know, we've spoken about this, but I lost my dad last year. What I feel is I have no time to waste. I do not have time to waste feeling insecure or ashamed or beating myself up and not being able to enjoy a wonderful experience.
Right.
I don't have time.
I think it's a beautiful view because no one knows their time. And to make sense of life, but only see it through the view of it ending, that feels counterintuitive and less motivating to participate.
Yeah.
So I like that you share that. I've at 54, I think is I'm saying, okay, ooh, what do I want over these next years, as opposed to what isn't left?
Yeah.
Or what, you're right. Wait, brother, I'm this close to maybe it not being as many years as I've done so far. Okay. Well, but now my focus is much more compassionate and energized through that hope of only experiencing joy. Not only, I mean, cause that's a global statement, but to try to experience joy as much as possible, as opposed to not. Yeah. And I think surrounding yourself with people that also want that for you, just as much as they want for themselves, can make a difference.
I agree. Community is huge. I lead retreats twice a year. Next year, I might actually add a third one because I love it so much. And there's something very palpable when you're in a room with people who just want to connect and are compassionate and curious. There's something about that energy. And people form relationships at these retreats that sometimes surprise me, because they would continue on with friendships long after they met for only 3 days. Yeah. And I think it's because it can be hard to find people who just want to embrace possibility and wonder and compassion and not all the other stuff, right? Don't want to break anybody down or gossip or, you know, worry, right? Don't want to have conversation where the primary topic is worry. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to find. So when we do, I think we want to keep that community together.
Right, right. And we're meant to be relational, and that helps build resilience in so many ways for us. So our retreat, what's it like to go to one of your retreats?
Oh,
I think
I think you do too. I can only say from my end as the facilitator, it's wonderful. I was just writing, I have one coming up next month in April, and I was just working on the agenda, and it's wonderful because we all have time. That's part of it. Disconnecting and giving ourselves time to talk to other people without a rush. That's hard too. Mm-hmm. And then not worrying about, you know, all your food, everything is taken care of. You're cared for. So you don't have to worry about all the minutiae. All you have to do is show up, and we do usually some meditation practices or sound bath. We do some movement. This time we're doing some yoga and Tai Chi, and then we do a lot of visioning, and we think about what we want more of. Sometimes that starts in a more general way, right? I want more excitement. I want more travel. I want more fun experiences. I want more connection. That's a little general. And then over time with conversation, you start to create an actual visual for what you want. And that's where it gets fun.
Sounds transformative as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Talk about your joy community, where people are like-minded in that hope and seeking of making joy a more prominent part of their lives.
Well, you know, I love Joy School. I've mentioned it a couple times. Joy School is go at your own pace, and you get short lessons from me. They're video lessons. I think there's a few things that I love about Joy School. People love a little bit of homework, something to anchor your mind to, because it's great to talk about joy in a amorphous way, but we need these concrete practices. Do this, right? Those were the best yoga classes I ever took, where someone just said, lift your right leg, place it between your hands, rise. Very simple directions, so my brain wouldn't get confused.
Right.
And I think we need that in life too. Do this one thing. So you get a simple short lesson, and you'll do one thing for a couple weeks. And then in between lessons, you get a love note. And I love that, because we need reminders that we're brave and strong and a gift. And so you get a text message reminder every other week that you are a gift, and we are so lucky that you are here. And then there is a live component too. Every 5 or 6 weeks, we hop on a live call, and people can ask questions. They usually ask them beforehand, so it's more me chatting and talking, and I'll answer questions that people have had. So I love Joy School, and I love that it feels accessible. It's $11 a month. So it doesn't feel like it'd be a difficult decision. It's easy for most budgets, at least.
Yeah, right. It sounds, what is the word? Magical, for certain.
Oh,
yeah. But it sounds like an opportunity to also hold yourself accountable to doing something different and practicing joy. Because you can't lie to your mind. If you are telling
That's
your mind,
right.
I'm happy, but you're not really happy, your mind knows. It knows you're telling it an untruth. So I really like having that space to for a lot of people, and to be reminded how important they are. I imagine you have some that have come in there that just haven't had that given to them by anyone else in their lives.
Yes. And it's surprising how many people respond back to those messages. Right. I'm always surprised. People just feel lit up. I think that somebody should just send people messages every single day, reminding them, because it makes such a difference.
Yeah.
We forget.
Right. Wow. What is something you would like listeners to take away from meeting you this way? And then I will have all the information how to find you in show notes, but what is it that you would hope for them in hearing this? And then they come and they can listen to you share more on your podcast. And where can they find you? And what do you want them to know?
Well, you can find me many ways, and I know you'll put it in the show notes. I think what I'd love for people to take away is almost anything is possible. Whether you're looking to just feel differently in your life or form some new relationships or create a business or change the kind of work you're doing or build something or build a small, tiny home in the middle of Maine, it's very possible. And one question that can help is, why not? Why not me? Why not me? I think we think it's possible for other people, but not ourselves. So maybe just ask yourself, why not? Why not me?
You leave room for possibilities with that, instead of saying not me.
Yeah. And I do think when we talk about hope globally for humanity, it's very important for us to find what lights us up. And one could say it's selfish given all the suffering going on in the world. And I don't believe it's selfish. I believe it really is the way to uplift all of us. If we all focused on what lights up our heart, that spark, we'd live in a very different place.
There's a ripple effect when you're okay with who you are in your space in the world, and you want that for others. And so you pour into them with love and compassion. It's an incredible ripple effect.
Yes.
And I think there's something to be said about it's not selfish to take care of your corner of the world well.
Yes.
By doing all these things that you're sharing and holding yourself accountable to them in whatever way, whether they're joining the Joy School or just changing their routine or any of that, because I think it also sends the mind the message that, like you said, almost anything is possible. It's so important, rather than to say anything is possible, because your mind knows, again, that's an untruth. You are not going to be a high jumper. I'm not going to be an astronaut. I get car sick. So being real and purposeful and how we're leading our lives, so that we can do in our space, do it well, because we might not all be able to go to another country and help in their suffering tangibly that way, right? But what we do here in our space every day does matter.
It does.
I'm so glad I met you, Melissa.
Heather.
Oh, your soul is just, it's exactly what the world needs. I am so, so glad you do what you do. It does matter. It does have a ripple effect. It's made me pay attention differently. And I just do really very much appreciate you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And thank you for inviting me to share this space with you.
Yeah, it's a joy. It is a joy. Ha ha.
Yay.
It is a joy, right? Okay. So now that I've emotions are fine. Also, listeners, all emotions are fine. You don't need to control any of them. That was just
no. Crying is my superpower.
I love it. I love it. It's a beautiful way to express and cleanse at the same time. Okay. Where can listeners find you? They're just going to finish listening to this bit and they want to find you right away. Where can they find you?
You can find me at my website, melissabloom.life. And it has all the things there. I have a book called The Path to Joy, a podcast that airs twice a week, very short episodes, which is nice. Joy school, retreats, all the things are on melissabloom.life.
Amazing. You're amazing. Thank you for putting joy into my day by having this conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.